Welcome to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. Today we begin with a little mini genealogy, a little mini family tree that is at the tail end of Genesis chapter 22. We've just seen the near sacrifice of Yitzhak, and now we're going to move to the next story that deals with the betrothal of Yitzhak, where he's going to get married. Because when Abraham was asked by God to sacrifice Yitzhak, Yitzhak was not yet married. He wasn't even betrothed, so he had no children, which is what adds great power to the story, because Abraham knew the promise that in Yitzhak, in his seed through Yitzhak, all the promises were going to be kept. And if Yitzhak didn't have any kids, then the only way for God to keep his promise would be to resurrect Yitzhak after Abraham sacrificed him. So now we're going to move on to how Yitzhak started having a family of his own. And that means introducing another character. So Genesis 22, verse 20 says, "Now after these things, it was told to Abraham, behold, Milcah also has borne children to your brother Nahor." Now you remember, Nahor stayed up at Haran when Abraham came toward Canaan in fulfillment of God's command to him. And Nahor was married to Milcah, which was their niece. She was probably roughly around their same age because she was the daughter of their much older brother. Milcah is the sister of Lot. And so that family up there has been having kids for a lot longer than Abraham and Sarah were. And so here's their little family tree for us. Verse number 21, Uz, his firstborn, Buz, his brother, which I always suspect that they were probably twins, Uz and Buz, Kemuel, who becomes the father of Aram, Kesed, Hazo, Bilash, Jidlaf, and Bethuel. Now, Bethuel fathered Rebekah. Now, Rebekah is going to get married to Yitzhak. So she is a key player in the next story that's coming up. And so that's why we have her little family tree thrown here in here at this point. So these eight, Milcah bore to Nahor, Abraham's brother. Moreover, his concubine, whose name was Rumah, bore Dibah, Gaham, Tahash, and Ma'akah. So with a little bit of family tree background, we now move to chapter 23. Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. Sarah died at Kiriath Arba, that is, Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So we know that Sarah died, based on the other dates that we've been using, in the year 239/38 BC. She and Abraham had lived in Canaan for 61 years at the time of her death. That means that nearly half of her life had been spent in Canaan. And her miracle baby, her miracle son, Yitzhak, was 36 when mom passed away. And yet he wasn't married. And this is another one of those things that helps us understand that because of their long-lived status, marriage was delayed in the patriarchal and matriarchal stories that we're reading here. So she never got to see any grandkids. She never got to see her son marry his own beloved. And so we're told in the last part of verse 2 that Abraham went in to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. And you know that this has got to be hard for him. Not only have they been married for decades, because remember, they've been in country for 61 years here in Canaan, but they came out of Ur of the Chaldees and out of Haran already married and not having any kids. So they actually may have been married 80-some years, maybe even more, when she passed away. And beyond that, they've known each other for Sarah's entire life, because she is Abraham's slightly younger half-sister. Same dad, different moms, only 9 years between them. So they've known each other 127 years and been companions for all of that time. He is broken up. He is grieving. And so verse number 3, Abraham rose up from before his dead and said to the Hittites. So this is, I'm almost positive, the day of her death. The day that he's figured out that she's not waking up. Because in this time, in this culture, you buried your dead immediately. So he goes and speaks to the sons of Heth. These are Canaanites of a certain family group, and they are living in the area of Kiriath Arba or Hebron or Mamre. They all know Abraham because they've known him for decades. And he says to this group, "I am a sojourner and foreigner among you." So he is a Shemite. They are Hamites. They actually lived in this land. They were the long-term occupants of this land when Abraham arrived. So he's just reminding them, I'm the outsider here. I don't have any property. Everything I've ever done, I've done by leasing the rights to graze and the right to dig wells and things like that. So I'm a sojourner and a foreigner among you. Give me property among you for a burying place, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. Now, this is almost certainly not the first person to die in his encampments, but it is his first family member, his beloved wife. And so he needs a long-term tomb situation. That's what he's looking for. So the Hittites answered Abraham, "Hear us, my lord." And so the wording here is clear that they have intense respect to him. They consider him to be the senior member of leadership in this region. "You are a prince of God among us," or possibly the language here could be, "You are a mighty prince among us, a mighty leader among us," because the word for God is also the word for mighty one. So they acknowledge that he is a special person with a special place in the community. And they say, "Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will withhold from you his tomb to hinder you from burying your dead." So every last one of them is like, "Abraham, pick a place. All of us have tombs in the area for our families. Pick a place, and you may put her in with our dead, our revered dead, because we have that much respect with you that we would be honored to have your family buried with our family. That's what they're saying. That's how they feel about him. Abraham rose and bowed to the Hittites, the people of the land. So he shows them respect. And he said to them, "If you are willing that I should bury my dead out of my sight, hear me and entreat for me Ephron, the son of Zohar, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he owns. It's at the end of his field. For the full price, let him give it to me in your presence as property for a burying place." So Abraham came to this meeting in the gate of the city with a place in mind. He knows that there is a double cave. That's the wording of Machpelah. There is a double cave at the back of this field owned by Ephron. It's not being used for anything. It's not a tomb yet. It's an empty double cave. And he says, "If you would please convince Ephron to sell me the entire property, the field as an access route and the cave at the back of it, that's what I would really like for you to do." Now, verse 10 says Ephron was sitting among the Hittites. He's probably a younger member of the community. He's fairly well-to-do, it seems, like so many of them, because honestly, let's be clear about this. This whole area is getting the overflow of the Abrahamic blessing because they have been interacting with Abraham in good ways throughout all these decades. And so they're getting blessed too, because God said, "I will bless those who bless you." And so the elder members of the community, Abraham talks to as a means of getting them to convince this younger member of the community, also wealthy, to sell property to him outright. So Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the hearing of the Hittites of all who went in at the gate of his city, "No, my lord, hear me. I give you the field." Now, you'll have to excuse me. I get kind of emotional when I tell this story because this is an emotional story. These people have so much respect for Abraham. This man, Ephron, probably grew up knowing the esteemed Abraham, the Hebrew, the Shemite, who rescues entire cities that have been kidnapped and who runs sheep all over the southern part of this region and is so very wealthy and has the most servants who would die for him. So Ephron wants to give the property to Abraham free of charge. Now, the reason I'm emphasizing this is because I have heard too many preachers and teachers and commentators say that Ephron is actually bargaining with Abraham for a good price. And I dispute that with all my heart. He says, "No, Lord, hear me. I give you the field and I give you the cave that's in it. In the sight of the sons of my people, I give it to you." So he says, right here with all these witnesses, "I gift you the property. Please bury your dead." He would have known Sarah as well. Then Abraham bowed down before the people of the land. Can you imagine that? Abraham is 136 years old. And here he is getting down on his hands and knees to say thank you to this council of Hittites, these local leaders that he usually works with. that he is usually kind of sitting on the same council for things like this. And he's bowing down to them to say, thank you for your consideration. And then he said to Ephron, in the hearing of the people of the land, but if it is your will, hear me. I give the price of the field, accept it from me, that I may bury my dead there. So Abraham says, no, I don't want you to give it to me. I want to pay for it. And Ephron answered Abraham, my Lord, listen to me. A piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver. What's that between you and me? Please just bury your dead. So he names what the market value is. There's no doubt about that. Now, again, some of these commentators think that he was bargaining with Abraham. I've even seen some of the commentators suggest that he overinflated the property value, and I just don't believe that. I think he is being quite transparent and genuine here in his love of Abraham, which I believe he had. He said, the land is worth 400 shekels. Now, a shekel was a piece of weight, or it was a measure of weight at this time. Eventually, this measure of weight of silver was struck into coins and became the shekel coin. We know the value of the later shekel coin was roughly 2 days' wages. So just for our sake of throwing something on it that we can understand, let's say it's worth 800 days' wages. So many tens of thousands of dollars of value. And so what Ephron is basically saying, it's only a few tens of thousands of dollars. Remember, he's very wealthy himself. That's nothing when you would like to have the piece of property. I'll write that off. But Abraham wouldn't let him do it. It may be that he was already thinking along the same lines that David thought later when somebody tried to gift him a piece of property. He says, I will not offer to God that which costs me nothing. And so in this case, Abraham may have been thinking, no, this is an important thing for me to do for my beloved wife. It shouldn't be free. So Abraham listened to Ephron. And Abraham weighed out for Ephron the silver that he had named in the hearing of the Hittites, 400 shekels of silver according to the weights current among the merchants. And so the field of Ephron in Machpelah, which is to the east of Mamre. Now Mamre is the actual name of the community that Abraham first came to here. Remember, it was the tree of Mamre. The Amorite, he and his two brothers that Abraham had spent so much time to. It's possible that Mamre has already passed away himself. But it does seem as if what used to be kind of a trading post camping site around this tree has turned into a walled city because they're in the gates of this city. So we know where the ruins of that little place is. And just east of there, about a third of a mile, is the Herodian enclosure that has been built over the top and around the cave of Machpelah. Herod the Great, because he was himself Jewish. Now, he was an Idumean by his ethnicity, but his family, before he was even born, apparently, had embraced Judaism as their faith. So he was raised Jewish, and so he counted all things Jewish as his own. And so he counted Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as his own ancestors, his revered ancestors. And so one of the great things that he did was build a grand enclosure around and over the top of the Cave of Machpelah to be an appropriate venue for people to come and pay their respects to the ancestors of the Jewish people. And so that's why we know exactly where it's at. I would really love to be able to go to visit this place and show my own respects, but it is in Palestinian control, Muslim control, and Christians and Jews are not very well welcomed there at the present moment. But back to our story, back to the text. It says, so the field of Ephron in Machpelah, which is to the east of Mamre, the field with the cave that was in it and all the trees that were in the field throughout its whole area was made over to Abraham as a possession in the presence of the Hittites before all who went in at the gate of his city. So a deed was written out. We have examples of these deeds. And guess what? They actually do describe the trees on the piece of property. And so that's what this would have done. It describes the boundaries, including all the trees, what type of trees they were, how big they were, things like that. And then the double cave at the back of the field. And it was transferred to Abraham as his only possession of land in the entirety of the promised land. And then after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah, east of Mamre, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. The field and the cave that is in it were made over to Abraham as property for the burying place by the Hittites. And so now the funeral is over, and the cave of the patriarchs and the matriarchs, the tomb of the patriarchs and the matriarchs, has its first occupant, Sarah. Abraham will join her. Isaac and Rebecca, whose story we tell next, they will also be entombed in this cave. And then Jacob and Leah will be entombed as well. Probably there were a few others that were put in the same cave, but those are the main occupants of the cave of Machpelah, the tomb of Machpelah. So all of that happened when, as I said, Yitzhak was 36 years of age. Now we know from the next story that he will get married when he is 40. So this next story probably begins a couple of years after Sarah's passing, and a year or so before Yitzhak gets married. And it starts with this in chapter 24. Now Abraham was old, well advanced in years. So we already talked about the fact that at his wife's death, he himself would have been 136. So when this story happens, he is maybe 138, maybe 139. And he who is had blessed Abraham in all things. Little reminder, everything that he has, all this bounty, all of this wealth has come to him from God. But do you know what he doesn't have? He doesn't have his wife. And he doesn't have a son that's married with grandkids. That's what he's missing. And so Abraham said to his servant, the oldest in his household who had charge of all that he had. Now, some people think that this might be Eleazar, blood sack Eleazar. Now, I would guess that Eleazar is himself in his mid-60s at this point, since I believe he was born right at the time that Abraham was entering into the promised land. He probably wouldn't have been the oldest, But it's possible that he might have been in charge here if everybody else had kind of retired. So he said, "Put your hand under my thigh, that I may make you swear by he who is the God of heaven, the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell." So Abraham is concerned that he may not be around for Yitzhak to get married. Now, he's actually going to live until he's 175. For a good long time after this, he's going to live. But he doesn't know that. I honestly think that Abraham is suffering from an extended bout of depression after the death of his beloved Sarah. And that he is so down in the dumps, so clinically depressed, that he is thinking that he will soon die himself, and that he does not feel up to the trip that he's going to give to this servant to do, and that he might not even survive his servant coming back. And so he extracts from his servant certain oaths in the name of God Most High or El Shaddai, that this servant, acting as Abraham's agent, won't allow Yitzhak to marry a non-believer, someone that doesn't believe in the same God as himself. And the way he extracts this is something we'll kind of talk about when we come back next. It is a symbol of swearing by the line, the genetic line, for this family. And I think it's related to kind of the Latin thing of having a testimonial, because that's going to be based on the same sort of thinking as this one. So mark your place there. Tomorrow, we'll get back into the Word.